248. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Ajnana Timaram Dasya Dhananjana Shalakaya. Chakshuram Nutam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Dapitam Yena Bhutale. Shayam Rupakadhanayam Dadati Sapadantikam. Adadanastinandante Idam Yache Puna Puna. Srimad Rupapadam Bhoja Tulisham Janma Janmani. Vairagya Bhakti Risham Priyatnai. Apayam Amana Bipsamandam. Kupambhuriya Paradhuka Dhuki. Sanatanastam Prabhamasriyami. Hanshakalpa Tarubhyascha. Kripa Sindhu Bhayevaja. Patipanam Bhavanebhyo. Vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Ghor Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ramo, Hare Ramo, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. At the beginning of Anuchet 236, it was said that there are various divisions of Vaidhi Bhakti, beginning, including surrender, service to the wise, hearing, singing, and other similar acts of devotion. Surrender, Sharanapati, was discussed in Anuchets 236 to 237, and the wise and service to the wise, Satseva, in Anuchets 238 to 247. Now we will describe hearing, which is the next in the sequence of devotional practices. So this section, which I picked to discuss, you know, the basic practices of devotional service, beginning with Sharanagati, taking shelter of the Supreme Lord, taking shelter of our relationship with the Supreme Lord, and having full faith that in the service to Krishna, which is engaging in our relationship to Krishna, all other needs are met for maintenance, for protection. Everything is there. And that type of faith, that type of shelter, that's the entrance to bhakti. And then it was described, the next, we had a long section on service to the wise, which includes discussion on the spiritual master, on serving other Vaishnavas, and the glory and potency and effect of serving the devotees. So I've gone over that so many times, and I do think I have a regular audience now that I don't have to go into a detailed discussion of what we discussed. I can just go forward. And I do feel if we just have once a week, we are covering substantial ground. And if you listen to the classes carefully, I think you'll get a very, very good sense and a very good understanding. And faith in the practices of devotional service and their glories. So hearing... Shravanam is divided into four sections. There's hearing the name, hearing about the form, hearing about the qualities, and hearing about the Lord's pastimes. And Srila Jiva Goswami will describe these and, you know, briefly. with a verse from the Bhagavatam. And sometimes he'll give a little commentary. Now, basically, all these processes, the way the process of bhakti works, is absorption in the absolute reality awakens our affection or relationship with the absolute reality. And that affection for the absolute reality reveals our true nature, because our true nature is as, I put you on, sit on the side because the deity is here. Because our relationship with the our identity, our self, what are we? What's self-realization? We are servants or lovers of God. So when that affection for God arises within our hearts, that love, then we begin to understand who we are. And we begin to understand who's God. So this process, Shravanam, now is going to be discussed. By the way, greetings from Panihati site, home of the Ruvel family, Newburgh or New Brunch here. It's a nice area. It's about 1 hour northwest of New York City. And I believe it's the fastest growing county in the United States or something like that. It's the next county outside of New York City that's growing or something like that. And so here's the definition. This is what hearing means, Shravanam. When the ears contact the words describing the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord, it is known as Shravanam, or hearing. So when the ear hears about the name, the form, the qualities, the pastimes. And then as Jiva Goswami always does, he cites a reference about Nam Shravan. Hearing about the name, O Lord. And this is Chitraketu, and he spoke to Lord Shankarshan. O Lord, is it not at all astonishing that those who see you become free from all sins? Because even an outcast person becomes liberated from material existence simply by hearing your name just once. So that's the power of hearing the Lord's name. Again, this once is when you can actually hear it with the proper, it has effect. When you can actually hear it with the proper faith, it's kind of like, you know, something, why doesn't the spiritual object have effect, sometimes people say. It's not that the object has no effect. Spirit name has effect. It's the nature of your consciousness. It's like fire is fire. It has effect. But if you take a rag and you put the rag in water, the fire will not burn the rag. So the name has so much potency. And it will, you know, and immediately in the proper consciousness, if it comes in contact with the consciousness, the consciousness will just the awaken its Krishna consciousness. That's why the example again with Narada Muni, we're discussing that on Sunday. When Narada Muni took the prasadam, all his sins were eradicated. It may not happen to us, but it's not a comment on the efficacy or potency of the prasadam. We can pollute our consciousness in ways. But even then, it's so powerful and so purifying. But when they give these things just once, you hear the Bhagavatam by once, it's a person whose heart is faithful and eager and open to that type of purification. And if you do that, you come in contact with the name, the form, the qualities, the pastime of the Lord, and immediately your eternal relationship with Krishna awakens. So here it says, even an outcast attains liberation merely by once hearing the Lord's name. If that's true, then an elevated soul who hears the Lord's name attains supreme devotion. This is the implication of the verse. So if an outcast, he gets liberated. Right? Well, what to speak? The real glory is getting prema. And that's that wonderful story of Haridas Thakur within the assembly of Govardhan and Hiranyak Manjumdara, the uncle and father of Raghunath Das Goswami, who were such pious souls that they basically, to protect the Vaishnavas from the oppression of the Mughals, the Muslim rulers, they basically, with their wealth, purchased a whole district in Bengal, Saptagraha. And therefore, the Vaishnavas would constantly come by, and they would have different functions. So they had one function, glorying the holy name, and all the scholars were getting up and giving the various glories of the holy name. And there were also, in that assembly, there were various smarta Brahmins, you know, and then when Haridas Thakur got up, he said, well, because everyone was saying like this, the holy name gives liberation. But Haridas Thakur said, well, that's not the real goal of the holy name, of chanting the holy name. He said, even by Namabhas, what if to speak of Shudanam, the pure name, even when you chant without offense, when you chant to try to clear offense, he said, then there's liberation. Just as when the sun comes in the dawn, as soon as the sun comes, the rogues and the thieves go. Just a little light. The full manifestation of the sun is not necessary for the rogues and thieves to leave. The rogues and thieves do their work at night when there's no light. Especially, we're talking about India. Years ago, the light was the sun. And when it went off at night and no one can see anybody, but as soon as it's dawn, there's enough light that the rogues and thieves go. He said, but the real glory of the holy name is that when the holy name arises, you know, that by chanting the holy name, one could get love of God at the ultimate goal of life. And people were incensed to the smart Brahmins, because to get liberation, Bahunam Jannanamante Gyanadam Mudta Padyate, after many, many, many births. This will be there also within Nam Kirtan also, because it describes how Nam Kirtan gives prema. And then there's a question of course, how can this happen? You know, because people who are listening to the Bhagavatam and following, the Jnana Marg, things like liberation are arduous tasks. And then there was a famous verse quoted, Bhakti Parashanu Bhavo Bharatir. How does it happen? Well, it happens simultaneously. Just like when you eat, three things happen at once. When you eat, automatically the pain goes of hunger. Automatically you feel satisfied, and automatically you have pleasure. They arise immediately at once. So in the same way, bhakti, bhaktir, I forgot the rest of the verse, that, you know, devotion and love, they all come, and on a direct realization, the bhaktir, detachment, and bhakti, they all come at once. And my godbrother Pradyumna made a very interesting point. You're practicing devotional service, and after a some substantial practice, the detachment is rising, right? But the bhakti is not equally rising. Then one is becoming impersonal. But if the bhakti is rising, but the detachment is not going, one is becoming sahajya, sentimental. In bhakti, they all rise simultaneously. When you have real bhakti, just like when you eat, pain is gone, satisfaction. In bhakti, as the devotion is rising, then the detachment is also rising. As the detachment is rising, the devotion is rising. Anyway, that's nam. Just once, liberation. By hearing of the holy name of Krishna. Anuchet 249. Now we will give an example about hearing about the Lord's form, as in Brahma's statements. That's about the... So here's a statement by Brahma, speaking to Lord Garbhodakashayi Vishnu. O Lord, your devotees smell through their ears the fragrance released from the whirl of your lotus feet, carried on the wind of the Vedas. You are never separated from the lotus hearts of such devotees, because have you bound your feet with the ropes of, because they have bound their your feet with the ropes of supreme devotion. So the effects of hearing about the Lord's form is that the Lord himself becomes situated in one's heart. This is the beauty of hearing. The beauty of hearing is that you're not only perceiving the Supreme Lord, but through the sound vibration, it's actually entering within you. And it's giving such a very, very a nice analogy that your devotees, it's an analogy, just like you're smelling a nice fragrance, so through the ears you're smelling the fragrance released from the whirl of your lotus feet, carried on the wind of the Vedas. The way Vedas means what you hear. So the wind of the Vedas, which means the instructions of the Vedas, the teachings of the Vedas, they carry the fragrance of, in other words, the description of the Supreme Lord. The whirl of his lotus feet. The lotus feet represent his form, but in a respectful way. So you're hearing from the Vedas about the form of the Supreme Lord, and it's very, very, very sweet. Right? The form of the Supreme Lord. It's very, very sweet. In the morning, I've been trying to learn one verse about Krishna and one verse about Radharani and their form. Anyway, I'll try to remember it. I got it. I'll remember it. I said this before. Baharpidabhiramam. So this is the wind of the Vedas carrying what? Baharpidabhiramam, a fragrance of the Lord's lotus feet. It means the qualities, the beauty. Of what is it? Baharpidabhiramam, his peacock feather. Migamata tilakam. And he has tilak made out of musk. Baharpidabhiramam Nigamata Tilakam Kundala Granta Gandhim, and shark like earrings swinging on his what is that? Kanjaksham, and beautiful lotus eyes. This is his form. And right now, we are doing this. By our ears, we're contacting his form. And it's just like you're smelling a rose. There's some sweetness that enters into your body. When you smell a rose, the fragrance is not separable from what is the rose, and it actually enters into you. So when you hear about the Lord's form, the sweetness of it enters into you. Kambukutam. Smita Subhaga Mukham, his beautiful smile of Krishna, Svadare Nyastaveinu. And he's playing his flute. Shantam, Shaimam. And he has this beautiful color of a monsoon cloud. Tribhangam. Tribhangam. His threefold pending form. So I'm hoping we are trying to drink this in and actually think of what Krishna, if you meditate on this, how beautiful is Krishna? He has a threefold bending form. Peaceful, Shyamam, Ravikara Vasanam, and this golden silken dhoti. Ushipam Vaijyanta Kavalam. And he has the forest garland hanging down to his knees, ornamented. Peacock feather. There's other verses. Baharpi dum, nutavara vatu, karnio, karnikaya. Baharpi dum, nutavara, like a beautiful dancer. Karnio, karnikaya, with yellow tulips hanging from his ears. Vrindavana, Vande, Vrindavana, stun. And where does he live? He lives in Vrindavan. Yudhakshatavirtam, surrounded by the gopis, Gopalavesham. And he's dressed as a cowherd boy. The verse preceding the one mentions those who are condemned because they have no regard for the Lord's form. The previous verse says, those who are fit to go to hell and who associate with those of unwholesome character do not respect your form. That's the previous verse. Those who are asat-prasanga, who are bad association, don't respect the form of the Lord. The impersonalists, they don't respect it. If you mention the form of the Lord, there's no respect. They think that this is a product of the modes of material goodness. This is transcendental form of the Lord. Thus, in the verse that follows, this verse, it says, two, however, satpasangam, they have no respect for your form, too, but the devotees, what's their relationship with the form? They're smelling through the ears, the fragrance from that lotus feet. They're hearing of Krishna's lotus feet. I actually, in I probably can't find it now, but I have to be very lucky. But one of my godbrothers, when I was interviewing people for about the holy name, discussed that in his meditation and in his japa, Prabhupada said many, many times we should think of the Lord's lotus feet. So we should actually think of the Lord's lotus feet. Maybe with tulsi leaves, with manjaris, dipped in sandalwood between each toe. Like we offer sometimes 8 tulsi leaves to the deity. So we can meditate that we're putting each between, because if there's 5 toes, we're putting it between each toe. So you're offering to the devotees. From this, it can be understood that those who oppose to hearing the Lord's form are the same people referred to in the previous verse as a satpasanga, are those of unwholesome company. The specific mention of the Lord's feet is out of feeling of great reverence. So when you mention service to the feet or the Lord's lotus feet, it's indicating the greatest respect and reverence. I mentioned this many times. The feet are the lowest part of the body. And it's only your feet. If you walked into a bathroom, you could walk with your feet. And the feet touch it. But if you put your hand on the floor, if you sat on the floor, if you put your face in the floor, so the feet are the lowest, but so when you worship the feet, it means humbly. So there's so much respect. When it is said that the devotees smell through their ears the fragrance of the Lord's lotus feet, It means that they relish the sweetness of the Lord's complexion, shape, and other features, just as one enjoys smelling an alluring fragrance to the nostril. So you smell a rose. It's so pleasant. So when the devotees hear of the Lord, the same pleasure that one gets, the startling and definitive pleasure when the fragrance of a rose enters, when the devotee hears, the same stimulation is there when he hears the complexion, shama, the shape, tribhangam, and other features of the Lord. The literature is the wind that carries the fragrance of the Lord's form. So how does it carry the wind, the fragrance of the Lord's form? Through kirtan, through speaking about it. And therefore we hear. This verse states that the Lord is unable to stray from his devotee's heart because his feet are bound by pure devotion characterized by love. These devotees, when they hear, and they get so much pleasure and so much respect for the Lord's form, then the Lord's form, by that hearing process, rests in their heart. Anuchet 250, hearing about the Lord's qualities. So this is guna. And what's the Lord's qualities? Aho bhakiyam kulaku tisthanam. Oh, how merciful is the Supreme Lord. How compassionate. That although Putana came to kill Krishna dressed as a nurse, the demon Putana, who came to kill Krishna with deadly poison on her breast, Krishna gave her the same destination as his mother. So how merciful is Krishna? That's one of the qualities of Krishna. Or Lord Chaitanya, we sing about his qualities. Parama karuna pahu dvijana mithai gaura chanda. So yeah. Hari Bol. So we sing and hear about the Lord's qualities. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Daya Kora More Tomadina Ke Dayalu Jagat Samsare Patita Pavana Hetu Tava Adhuta Mosama Patita Prabhu. His compassion. We hear about that. We hear about the Lord's qualities and all his wonderful qualities. Now we will cite an example of hearing about the Lord's qualities. Sukadeva Goswami says, and I try to listen carefully, it's a very interesting point that comes up. O King, I have narrated to you these stories of glorious kings who achieved great fame in this world and then met their demise. In order to depart you knowledge of the unsubstantiality of sense enjoyment, and thereby to invoke in you a spirit of detachment from the same. These stories are merely a display of eloquence and have no bearing on the absolute truth. On the other hand, the descriptions of the qualities of the Lord, who is praised with choice poetry, are constantly sung by elevated souls and eradicate all inauspiciousness. One who is eager to attain pure devotion to Lord Krishna should continuously hear these narrations on a daily basis. So this is from the 12th canto and about the Lord's qualities. And a very interesting point here, because it describes here that within the Puranas or within any, there's a narration of various kings. And it explains a very interesting point. The word is given vacho vibhuti. This is just the vibhuti or eloquence of words. Vacho vibhuti. Because the reason that the kings are mentioned in the Bhagavatam is because, or any Purana must have this criteria for something to be a history. So the Bhagavatam, to be a bona fide history, has to have different subject matters. And one is a description of the dynasties. In fact, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam follows the 9th canto. And the 9th canto, they're describing the Yadu dynasty. When it describes the Yadu dynasty, it comes to, you know, Krishna's father or something, and then Maharaj Prickett wants to hear in detail about that. So the whole 10th canto is an explanation of when they're describing the dynasty of the kings. So the reason why every Purana has to have a description of the dynasty of the kings is, especially when they describe, two things. One, you see when you describe the king, what is the king? The king is the epitome of material aspiration. If you have material aspiration, then that aspiration, you know, you want to be the ruler. You wanted the person, the kings would have great opulence. And I describe this, I saw a picture of Queen Elizabeth, you know, she came to America and they hosted a dinner for her at the White House. And it's amazing, you know, she came and she had this crown of diamonds that she wore there. And anybody else who wore the crown of diamonds, it would be considered ostentatious. But why did they have such riches and fabulous jewels and palaces, etc.? Because they had a service, and the service was to rule the citizens. And whenever you're in a position of authority and you have to rule or manage something, the more authority you have, then the easier it is to rule. And as it was their job to rule the citizens, and the common masses of people would see greatness in terms of opulence. So their reverence and respect and submission is to something greater. So the king would have to be to show that he's greater, and therefore he would have all this wealth and opulence, and it would make the citizens naturally submissive. And the accoutrements of power were a facility for ruling. And therefore they would use that, even if they were completely detached, great kings. But when you tell the story of these kings that had great opulence, there's one thing in common. They were also born, they also suffered disease, they also die, and we also get old age. And what to speak of all other types of intrigues. And in the same sense, when you were these kings, they also renounced the world, like the Pandavas, like Bharat Maharaj, you know, which shows that they're also not satisfied. Otherwise, why give it up? They also renounced the world. So the kings, in every way, by showing a lineage of the kings, you're educating the general people who read the histories, right? That this material aspiration is temporal, it's full of suffering, and it's not the ultimate goal. Because even the greatest kings, we see in the Bhagavatam, the Pandavas, they leave it, Bharat Maharaj, he gave up his opulence and all his kingdom and wealth as easily as one gives up stool after evacuating. All these things are there. So it describes, and then there's another thing. So that's the purpose of listing the genealogical list of the kings. That's the purpose. The purpose is to show the temporal nature of the material world, even at the highest station of material success. so that the common masses don't falsely aspire for that, because the whole purpose of the scriptures is to give moksha, liberation, to get out, not to have a position within this world. So the beautiful thing about that is therefore Jiva Goswami explains, therefore that's the purpose of listening to King. It's not about history. It's not about history. And therefore, someone who looks to the Bhagavatam for history, that's not what it's about. Yes, the kings existed, and they're describing the genealogical thing, but they're not focused on the dates and the history, because that's not the purpose of it. So therefore, it says, Vacha Vibhuti, his speech is like that. So Sridhar Swami comments, in the first of these two verses, Sukha reveals the purpose for which he has described the genealogy of different kings. He has done so simply to impart knowledge and detachment. Knowledge here refers to realization of the futility of sense enjoyment. And with that, this understanding comes detachment. So from jnana comes vairagya. If you actually know the real nature of this world and the history of this world, then you become detached. Then you don't aspire for material position, because as Prabhupada said, now, what's that story? I forgot, Prabhupada quoted an English saying, time and tide wait for no man. You know, the king was so powerful, he said, let me stop the tide. But time and tide wait for no man. So that's the purpose. These stories of kings who have now passed away, they also died, are a mere display of eloquence. In other words, I'm not glorifying their opulence. That's not the purpose. He says, as such, they are not expressions of the absolute truth. Then what is an expression of the absolute truth, which is beneficial for all humanity? The next verse is spoken in response to this question. The word nitya means the descriptions of the Lord's quality should be recited daily, and abhikshna means that on top of this they should be sung continuously. So within the lineage of kings, they actually... Now, a very interesting thing, he says, within the lineage of kings, they'll also mention Ram, they'll also mention Lakshman, etc. But the purpose of their narrations is not to show the futility of material existence. The purpose of their narrations is to show the wonderful qualities of the Lord. And he said, well, why are they included in the other kings? And it describes something which is called, we have to stay up otherwise. It's something that's described, it's very interesting. It's called umbrella, the logic of the umbrella bearer. Right? So what's the logic of the umbrella bearers? It says when it is raining, and a majority of people are carrying umbrellas, someone may look and say, the people are carrying the umbrellas. Although one or two people in the crowd may not be carrying umbrellas, they are part of the mass of people that are carrying umbrellas, and as such they are grouped together with the rest. This is called the principle of the umbrella bearers. So it says, incarnations of the Lord, such as Ram and Lakshman, have been included in descriptions of kings whose stories have been narrated for the purpose of detachment. But just because they're there, just because, you know, it's raining and there's, you point there and say, someone would say the people are carrying umbrellas. But not everyone's carrying umbrellas. So you may look to the lineage of kings and you may say, they're narrated for the purpose of detachment. But that's not the purpose of narrating Ram and Lakshman. But they're included for that reason. It refutes the idea, have been narrated for the purpose of detachment. They're not. Because it says, the reason that they're described the description of the qualities of the Lord, who is praised with choice poetry, are constantly sung by elevated souls, and they eradicate all inauspiciousness. One who is eager to attain pure devotion to Lord Krishna should continually hear these narrations on a daily basis. I was thinking in India, I remember this very, very clearly. All of a sudden on television came the story of the Mahabharata. And it was such a thing in India. And something like on one day of the week, I think on Sunday at 11 o'clock, the whole country closed. They had first the Mahabharata, then they had the Ramayana, and then they had the story of Krishna. The whole country was closed. And in fact, this is also a fact that they were having parliament sessions. And when they were having parliament sessions, it coincided with the time of this show, and they couldn't get a quorum in the parliament. And they actually had to change the time of the parliament. According to the third verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, the entire contents of this book are ambrosial. So it says, this Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature fruit of the desire tree of the Vedas, and it is full of nectar. Nigama kalpa turo galitam phalam sukam mukha amrita. Anyway. Nigama kalpa turo galitam phalam sukam mukha amrita. Gavyasam yutam vibhata bhagavatam rasamalayam. It says the whole Bhagavatam is rasa. So then what are these other descriptions that are there? Okay, so yet in some places, the descriptions are direct manifestation of bhakti ras, delineating the various relationships with the Lord, whereas in other places, the descriptions are in the form of the ingredients that make up the rasa. Anyway, what Jiva Goswami is saying is that everything in the Bhagavatam is rasa. And what is rasa? It's intense affection for Krishna. So some things present it directly, and some things are the components of this rasa. I'm going to finish today. Thank you for all being there. Let me just finish the paragraph here. The word guna in Srimad Bhagavatam refers to the Lord's qualities such as compassion. Such indeed is the nature of the recitation of the Lord's qualities. It's found in Gita. And then he gives another reference from Gita, 11:36. It is fitting indeed, O Lord Rishikesh, that the universe exalts and is filled with love by chanting your names, qualities, and glory. Hearing the so now he says in this Shravanam Nam, Shravanam Rupa, the Lord's form, and Shravanam Guna, the qualities of the Lord, he says hearing the qualities of the devotees is also recommended in hearing. Just as hearing the qualities of the Lord, you can hear the qualities of the devotees. And he quotes a very nice section of the Bhagavatam. A greatly fortunate one, please narrate these incidences if they relate to Lord Krishna or his devotees, who licked the honey from his lotus feet. So there's a part in the Bhagavatam where they're narrating the history of the Bhagavatam, and the history of the Bhagavatam is, and this is Sita Goswami is explaining, the history of the Bhagavatam is Vyas, Sukadeva, Maharaj, Prakrit. So he's explaining about Maharaj Prakrit and then this verse. Shonaka becomes very, very excited. And who is Shonaka Rishi? Shonaka Rishi is the eldest and most learned Vedantist. And the quality of Shonaka Rishi throughout the whole Bhagavatam is he's the one that's hearing the sages of Nandasharanya speaking to the sages. And the sages are headed by Shonaka Rishi, and he's the chief of the sages. And his qualification is his eagerness to hear. That's his qualification. In fact, in the Bhakti Sandarbha, previously, Jiva Goswami, he gives a particular verse which says, our level of advancement, our love, you can gauge your love for Krishna by your desire to hear about Krishna. If you want to know how advanced someone is, then see how eager they are to hear about Krishna. Because the eagerness to hear about someone is your love for someone. Now, let's say right now you have a love, an infatuation, or an attraction to a particular person. Then if I speak about that person, you'll be very eager. You even think, perhaps to your youth, you had some type of infatuation. And then you'd want to hear anything said about that person. So your eagerness to hear is directly related to your level of love. And it's very, very humbling. I always tell that story of Borijan Prabhu when he, somehow or other, he became the GBC, chairman of the GBC. But he had so many responsibilities because he was also teaching in the Gurukul. And he was also writing books. And when you write books, you may neglect management and you can cover it up with some, but in writing, you have to be there with every word. And he had this open room that was accessible to everyone. And I remember, people would want to sit down and just waste his time in the evening. Just hang out. We had no time. And he had this way, I remember it, almost like, we didn't want to waste time. So he said, oh, the person would come and say, okay, let's read the CC. Let's read the Bhagavatam. The person, okay, no, I have to go now. I have to go now. But when someone is advanced, they just want to hear about Krishna. They want to hear about Krishna. They want to hear about the name. They want to hear about the qualities. And that's their advancement. So that's Shonaka Rishi. And this is his eagerness to hear about the devotees. Because hearing about the devotees is hearing about God. Isn't it? Nashta Prayeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavatam says that, everything inauspicious will be destroyed by serving the devotees. Nitya Bhagavata Seva. How? Regularly. And what's the service of devotees? And Prabhupada makes that beautiful statement. And there's two Bhagavatas. There's the book Bhagavata and there's the person Bhagavata. And they're the same. Why? Because the book Bhagavata is about the person Bhagavata. And the person Bhagavata is about the book Bhagavata. I was reading today in the CC and the Adi Lila, and this is a very interesting point. There's a verse describing that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda have risen together, almost like the sun and the moon arising together on the horizon of Gaudadesh to dissipate all darkness. And then it describes that when Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda destroy the darkness in your heart, they bestow on you the benediction of the two Bhagavatas. The book Bhagavata and the person Bhagavata. And it's by the book Bhagavata and the person Bhagavata, by service to these two, that one develops his eternal relationship with Krishna. If we're all interested ultimately in knowing our sarup, developing our eternal relationship with Krishna. What is the process of developing an eternal relationship with Krishna? It's the book Bhagavata and the person Bhagavata. And I know because sadhu sangha, association with the devotee, means he's speaking about the Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam is narrating the stories of the devotees. Why? Because the devotee means one who is aware of God, one who is focused on God. So when you come in association of a pure devotee, you start to see from his vantage point. His consciousness is always focused on God. And therefore, if you take his association, your consciousness is focused on God. Although in the verse under discussion, the word guna is also indicative of the beauty of the Lord's form and pastime, yet because glorification of the Lord's qualities is predominantly described in Srimad Bhagavatam, this particular act of devotion has been singled out here. The Lord should be understood, the same should be understood when other limbs of devotion are described later. In this verse, bhakti means love, and amala pure means devoid of desire for liberation. Anyway, bhakti here means praying. Anyway, it seems... Now, a very interesting thing, I just give coming attractions. Somehow today, I wanted to spend more time with the text before I gave the class, but I'm hoping that we got a general idea. What's going to come now is a very, very interesting analysis of a verse, which where there's always something called to establish something. There's two things you do. You describe its glories, and you describe you would describe the importance or the glories indirectly by showing the deficiency of those who fail to do that activity. So it describes, there's this one verse, it's right at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, that all people, you know, it describes different types of people, will be attracted to hearing the pastimes of Krishna, except one person, Pashubhya. And it means the killer of the animal, the butcher, or, as Prabhupada said, the killer of the soul. And Jiva Goswami and his analyzer, very interesting. It describes, you know, those who are materialists, those who are seeking liberation, and those who are seeking pure devotion. Everyone is attracted to hearing the glories of Lord, except that person, Pashubhya, who is killer of the soul. So killer of the soul means a butcher. And I tell that story once, that when I first came to Krishna consciousness, my parents were so much opposed to me coming. My parents were so much opposed to me coming to Krishna consciousness that somehow or other one day they all visited the temple on 55th Street. There's 9 or 10 family members, 12 family members there. And they actually came, and they, you know, the prasadam was great. And they all enjoyed the prasadam. The pakoras with the tomato chutney and the lugloos. But there were two people who just wouldn't take any prasadam. They wouldn't even touch it. And it was my grandfather, and it was my uncle. And my grandfather had a slaughterhouse, and my uncle went into business with him and became the multi-millionaire. He became the largest distributor of, you know, anyway, like poultry or something, or frozen, you know, something. Those, so I can understand Pashubhya, it was connected. Although my grandfather donated somehow to the publishing of the Waves of Devotion. It was all his money. So somehow or other, something there happened. But Pashubhya also means those who criticize the devotees. So interesting. Okay, we'll end here for today. Are there any questions?
Maharaj?
Yes.
This is Rasika.
Rasika, hi Krishna.
Hi Krishna. Earlier on, you mentioned something about Sahajism. I don't remember.
Oh yeah, I mentioned it. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam. Thank you for that, you know, bringing that up. It said that it was Pradyumna, and there's a verse in the Bhagavatam that says, Bhakti Pareshanu Babo Bharatir. I forgot the rest of the verse, but it says, it gave the example that the nature of performing devotional service is and it wanted to describe that, you know, the devotee gets, you know, the devotee automatically gets liberated, you know, when he performs devotional service. And what will happen is naturally those who are on the path of Jnana, where it's such an arduous process, they question how this can happen so quickly for a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
So the verse says that when you take the devotional service, then detachment or liberation, direct realization, and love, they all happen at the same time.
Right.
Just as when one is eating, the pain of hunger, the satisfaction one's feeling, and the taste and relish of the food all happen at once.
Yeah.
So when Pradyumna is describing this, Pradyumna describes, so for a devotee that's practicing Krishna consciousness, his devotion and his detachment will proceed together. And Pradyumna gave the example that there are some people that, they, you know, if their detachment is really great, but their devotion is not coming up, right, then there's a tendency for impersonalism.
Right.
But then at the same time, if someone is, you know, exhibiting all these great ecstasies, right,
mm-hmm.
but he's still, you know, so, you know, he's just all these great ecstasies, but he's still, you know, engaged in sinful activity, you know,
and it won't come up.
Then it's kind of, it's sentimental.
Yeah.
So we see that, you know, that the actual thing in Krishna consciousness, that when one actually has rag marg,
mm-hmm.
you know, he actually has this, you know, a distraction of his eternal relationship with Krishna, right?
Yeah.
Then he becomes attached also. So when you see that dichotomy, that someone is exhibiting so many symptoms of ecstasy, but he's still engrossed in sense gratification, right?
Yeah.
There's something wrong.
Yeah, that's. I think Prabhupada was so heavy on that subject matter, and my question was that, are we protected from becoming sahajiyas or, you know, tinged with that by hearing the philosophy, but now I understand it's a mixture of hearing and chanting and following the principles.
Yeah.
You know, strictly that you cannot be, that you'll get rid of any sahajiya tendencies.
Well, I think the point is if you follow and practice the system under the guidance of Guru, as Prabhupada gave,
yeah.
then, you know, you're advancing in Krishna consciousness, and when you advance and you get those attractions, I mean, that was the whole warning of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur,
mm-hmm.
because it's just not the philosophy. If you
right.
see someone who has, you know, great symptoms of ecstasy, but of course, you know, the nature of bhakti, it can come at any, you can get attraction for Krishna by the mercy of a devotee at any stage, you know, even when you're immersed in sense gratification, the devotee can inspire you. But if that inspiration is real and you take it into your heart and you practice Krishna consciousness, then you'll also give up your bad habits gradually.
Right.
You know, but if someone is, you know, after some time in practice claims to be such a great devotee and is, you know, exhibiting so many symptoms of ecstasy, but, you know, the bad habits are not going, then according to this verse, there's something wrong, because they're generally supposed to happen together.
Yeah, it's very, very simple.
Like when you're eating,
yeah.
right? Yeah. Then the pain goes, and the satisfaction and the relish comes.
Right.
So in the same way, in bhakti, the indifference to the material world, the relish, and the direct realization of God also, to some extent, come at the same time and rise at the same time. That was Pradyumna's point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rafi. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anybody else like to ask a question?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
It's Mahamuni. Please do
something. Yeah, hi, Mo.
Maharaj, I'm trying to understand this strategy that Jiva Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami is using, when he'll sometimes present a positive benefit and then sometimes describe what happens when you don't take advantage of the
It's not Jiva Goswami. It's the Bhagavatam itself.
Oh, he's showing it in the Bhagavatam?
Yeah, he's showing it in the Bhagavatam. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
It says, what is it? Savai Pumso Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Doksa Jay Haitaki Apatiyata. You know, bhakti is, you know, unmotivated devotion, right? Then it says, Dharma Sunushtita Pumsa Viviksena Katasya Napariye Yatiratim Shame. But those who don't have, you know, what is Dharma? Dharma is to serve Krishna, right?
Yeah.
But then it says, when you, anyway, it's called Yati Rake.
Yeah.
Indirect, yeah.
There's, I don't know if this is useful.
Yeah.
It's standard practice in Nyaya, or just Indian logic, that there's two ways to show that there's a universal connection between two things. The
yeah.
positive way is Kevalanvayan, which is
yeah.
if there's smoke, there's fire. And the opposite is Vyatireka. If there's no smoke, there's no fire. So it's kind of interesting. It seems like what Jiva Goswami is doing, if I understand it, is this is a way of showing this is just a law-like connection between chanting and, I guess, purification. Does that make sense? Or
I would just say that they used all the standard, knowledge and logic and everything to present their points. And it would always present, if you want to present the glories of chanting, show what the results of chanting are and show what the results of not doing it are.
Yeah.
You know, and when you show the results of not doing it, you're indirectly showing the glories of chanting. So it says like that, like for example, it gave the glories of service to the devotees, right? But then it said, Yasyatma Buddhi Kanapeta Tatuke Sadikla. But those people, right, who don't serve the devotees, right, then say Eva Gokula. You know, then they're, what are they like? They're no better than, cows or asses. You know, if you don't extend your sense of self to the service to the devotees, your sense of relatedness, you're saying, you know, so it's just standard. And I've seen it all through that you show, and I guess it's what you're saying, it's standard in Indian systems of logic.
It's just really remarkable to see how it's being applied here.
Yeah.
But my understanding that is, it's not that it's showing something different. Right, Maharaj? It's showing the same exact principle. It's just showing it kind of on the opposite side. Right.
It, here it says, the importance of hearing the Lord's qualities is indirectly supported by recognition of the deficiency of those who fail to do so. So what's the importance of hearing the Lord's qualities? Well, the importance is that, you know, those who hear about the Lord, you know, get liberation and, you know, and what's the importance of hearing the Lord's qualities? Well, those that don't, I like this. Yeah. It's the same point. It's important to the glories. Well, how do we prove it? Well, we prove it directly, that by chanting and hearing, this is what you get. We prove it indirectly. When you don't do it, this is what you get.
All right. Well, thank you, Marge.
Anything else? Okay.
Not for me, no.
Anybody else like to ask a question? Okay. Would anyone? Yeah, hi, Krishna.
Yes, Maharaj.
I both, yeah. Go ahead.
I had a couple. One is, a very obvious one, but I just want to ask it anyway. Referring to your wet rag analogy in the beginning of.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to ask you if, you know, Krishna's name is. Not that Krishna's name is not powerful, why we don't experience any effect, as you were saying, is because of the consciousness. And so I was just going to ask if the best way to dry out our wet rag of a consciousness is by, if the most efficient and effective way to dry out Red of consciousness is attentive chanting.
Well,
so
yeah,
it can catch fire.
Yeah. It would be like if the analogy was from some section where it said, you know, wanted to show that like the name is always potent, it doesn't change, but why doesn't it have the same effect? You know, or why is its effect lessened on something? And it's because the object is and the example is fire is always fire. It doesn't change. But when something, if a rag is dipped in water, then its condition is resistant to the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And what would be the way of doing it? Well, you still put the wet rag in fire and it dries
mm-hmm.
it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it would be the same thing. You know, it's the holy name. But so how do we get to that point by hearing once or eternal relationship? Well, by the process is hearing, and therefore it's chaito, dharpana, marginum. Chaito, dharpana, marginum. Chaito is the subtle body or the consciousness. Dharpana means mirror. And so in the mirror of the consciousness, the mirror of the consciousness should reflect God and ourselves or our eternal relationship. So right now we're looking at our heart and we can't see ourselves as Krishna's servant.
Mm-hmm.
Nor can we see God. Why? Because like a mirror, it's covered. When a mirror is covered with dust, you can't see what's reflected in it. So reflected within our heart is our soul and is God. And therefore, to clean the mirror of the heart, that's sankirtan, chanting and hearing. And by repeatedly doing that, and it takes patience. You know, it takes patience. You know, there's so much desire in there, and subtle and gross, and it takes the patience of that process, and that faith in that process, so that we'll make the endeavor. To actually purify the heart. Yes. What's your next question, Gail?
Yeah, actually, I got a little inattentive, so I missed the analogy when you were discussing the king and how, you know, kings like Ram are among, you know,
there's a list of the kings, and he mentioned what is the purpose of giving the list of the kings. Well, the purpose of List of the Kings is to show the insubstantiality of material existence. That even though someone is a king, the supreme enjoyer in this world, right, he also dies. And, you know, He's also temporary. And therefore, the purpose of listing the kings is to invoke detachment. Detachment from what? The aspiration to become the enjoyer or the controller. Because it's a futile endeavor. Because the result is temporary. The king is a temporary position, he also dies. So what was mentioned there is that Ram, and they're also listed in those kings,
yeah.
But it's not for the same reason. It's to actually show the glories of the Lord who appear as kings, right? And therefore, there's a called the logic of the umbrella bearer, and it says when it's on a rainy day, you'll say, look, all the people have umbrellas, right?
Yeah.
But it may be 90%, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because there's a majority, the other people are counted in that group.
Yeah.
So in the same way, when there's the list of all these kings, then you'll say, there'll be a statement, you know, the kings are to show the futility of material existence.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not all the kings, it's not Ram and Lakshman. They're meant to show the qualities of God.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called the logic of the umbrella bearer.
Oh. Uh-huh.
You know, when there's so many people doing the same thing,
mm-hmm.
you'll group them all together.
Yes.
Even if some are not actually, you know, we can point out, let's say we're in Manhattan and we're looking down on the street and we see so many people there,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And we see so many people there, and then we see, look, all the people are wearing it, are carrying umbrellas today. So even though we are making an absolute statement covering everyone, we understand, right, that actually not everybody is carrying an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, even in the Shastra, you make those absolute statements that here is a list of kings that exhibit, and the purpose of the kings is to exhibit detachment. We understand that that statement does not refer to everyone,
mm-hmm.
as the statement that, you know, all the people are carrying umbrellas doesn't refer to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's certain logic where absolute statements are made, right, but they're not to be taken that way.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Okay?
Thank you.
Anybody else like to say, ask a question or say Hare Krishna today?
All right, I just wanted to also say that somehow it's like I can understand how certain pastimes can give like eternal pleasure or something, because somehow or other, although I've heard it so many times, every single time you mention that Boy John Taboo story,
yeah,
I just crack up every time. It's so funny,
isn't it? Because
it's funny.
It is funny, right?
It's, I don't know, somehow or other, every single time you mention that story, it tickles my funny bone.
Well, it is funny, I think. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Gail. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna today?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Bol, who is that?
This is Govardhan from Edison, New Jersey.
Hare Bol, Govardhan Jai. Thank you for coming today. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who's that?
This is Gordon.
Hey, Gordon, nice to hear from you.
I wanted to ask you a small question.
Go ahead.
Concerning devotional poetry, could one consider chanting Hare Krishna as a form of poetry, divine poetry? You're a novice, just beginning.
Chanting.
Where would one read it from the Bhagavad Gita?
I don't understand your questions. Can we consider? Say that again.
What would one could, like, you mentioned about devotional poetry.
Yeah.
Where would one find it in the Gita? And if it's not, with chanting the Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, would that be considered a form of poetry, or I'm curious.
Well, in terms of finding poetry in the Bhagavad Gita, the whole thing is poetry, because it's in, you know, meter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's a type of poetry. Dehena smin yata dehe komaranyo vanam jara yata dehantara prate. You know, it's a type of poetry. It's kind of a statement that's, you know, put into rhyme. And, you know, so the whole Bhagavad Gita is definitely, I mean, poetry. And the standard of Indian philosophy, generally speaking, is it's all written in, would you call that poetry when it's just rhyme and meter?
Rhyme and meter, yeah.
Yeah.
How to follow, to understand.
Yeah, so in the same sense, I mean, in one sense, it's a type of a song, at least, and you know, it's lyrics. You know, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it's both a manifestation of God and a prayer to serve God at the same time. So I guess in that sense, there's a double meaning to it, and there's also many, many meanings to, you know, I mean, Hare Krishna is Radha and Krishna in union. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare is Radha and Krishna in separation. So, yeah, it's all poetry. But, Gordon, because we needed to touch base, I'll be in all day tomorrow if you want to give me a call, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Gordon. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, we'll begin. We'll finish next week with Shravan, and then we should get soon on to Kirtan, and that's one of my favorite sections in Bhakti Sandarbha. Thank you all. Ancha Kalpa, Purubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu, Deva Sattva Pitanam, Pavanidhyo, Vaishnavidhyo.